Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. Another extraordinary week in California politics. This is the week when the rules really change. The rules for who gets vaccine and when. The rules for reopening amusement parks, theme parks, also reopening sports stadiums, reopening concert venues. And I just realized that amusement parks and theme parks are kind of the same thing. So we talked to the guy who's in charge of making the rules. Dr. Mark Alley is the Secretary of Health and Human Services. He's often by Gavin Newsom's side for those press briefings. He is kind of the Dr. Fauci of California. And we talk to him for the very first time. We also talk later with Karen Bass, the author of the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act. We talked to her about that and about the COVID relief bill. But let's start with Dr. Alley. Big news this week when it comes to vaccine distribution, and that 40% of vaccines in California are going to go to the hardest hit areas, which is about 400 zip codes. 8 million people will now be targeted. More about the amusement parks and sports in a second, but let's start there with the vaccine distribution. Dr. Alley, welcome to The Issue Is for the very first time. Great to have you.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for having me, Alex.
All right. So let's start with the new vaccine strategy. This is a big deal for the state. How exactly is this going to work and why now? Why is this so needed now?
Look, the communities that have burdened the greatest proportion of COVID-19 hospitalizations and deaths are those in these zip codes that we're targeting. So making sure that we more effectively get vaccine into the arms of those who live in these communities is a key strategy. And it's not just to protect those communities, but we know that transmission in certain parts of the state, those communities in particular, we talk about them as the lower quartile Healthy Places Index communities, largely Central Valley, lot in Southern California, LA region. When we can control transmission in communities and areas like those, we know that the whole state is going to be better off. So focusing the vaccine effort very, very much in those communities is a key strategy to get through this altogether.
You know, there's been a lot of frustration with people trying to get an appointment for a vaccine, especially in some of these communities where there are some internet access issues. What's your advice to somebody, especially in those communities, who say, look, I'm trying. I go on. I'm confused. I can't get an appointment. Help me here.
Well, this week's announcement is in part not just focused. I know the headline was 40% of vaccine is going to go into these communities. That's a big deal. But on top of that is a lot of support to community-based organizations, the clinics that individuals who live in these communities know and trust, focusing on the messenger, not just the message, making sure that we can protect appointments so that those in communities where internet access isn't as great, people don't have the same time to sit and refresh their browser 10 times over to get that one appointment that's open, protecting those appointments and targeting them in these communities through our community-based partners is a key strategy. So as people currently keep trying to get on to those appointments, we're going to find a way to protect them and make sure they get into the hands and ultimately the vaccine in the arms of the people in the communities that we're focused on.
And we know there's also work being done in terms of mobile clinics, phone banks, other ways to outreach to people in those communities as well. But the governor himself has said to me that, look, we have not done enough on this front when it comes to getting underserved communities. And there are some critics who say, why did it take so long to have this strategy you just announced now?
Well, we've been working on it for quite some time. And you'll remember early on, vaccines were focused on healthcare workers. Largely healthcare workers live in some of the more affluent communities, doctors, nurses, others who live work in those settings. And frankly, some of the healthcare workers who live in some of the more hard hit communities are working through decisions to get vaccinated, getting the right outreach and education. So right now is an important time to get this focused and really help us carry this through. And I'll just remind you one last fact. We're seeing it in the data. We've said the data is going to guide us. What we're seeing now is this roughly 25% of our eligible Californians in the focus zip codes have only received 17% of the vaccine. Mm. Those in the more affluent areas of the state, over 30% of the vaccine. That's an inequity that isn't can't be tolerated and that we're working hard to fix.
Let's talk now about the other big news of the week, a plan to reopen stadiums and concert venues outdoors. This is all outdoors, and this all begins April 1st. Let's put some of the information up on the screen about some of the numbers here. Stadium events can reopen at 20% capacity if the county's in the red tier, 33% capacity in the orange tier, 67% capacity in the yellow tier. This is exciting for a lot of folks, but walk us through this. What is this experience going to be like when you go to a sporting event? Because it's not going to be like what we saw before.
Yeah, I see this as an opportunity for us to basically wrap a bubble around a group of fans from the same household that go and get an outdoor experience of something that so many people have missed. They'll sit in seats pretty far away from others. They'll be asked to keep their mask on. They'll be helped in and out of the stadium. Concessions will be very different than normal. Not get out of your seat whenever you want to go up to the concourse and buy, you know, garlic fries or a soft drink. There'll be a lot of controls on how fans come in and out. And I think still many people will get the joy of something they've missed for quite some time. So this is part of the strategy, of course, is continuing to focus on COVID health and making sure we protect our communities, but being thoughtful about where people are mentally and emotionally, and things like activities, live events, ball games are exciting. I know something I look forward to soon, too.
And of course, get to go cheer on the World Series champion Dodgers in person. Another big announcement concerns outdoor theme parks. Starting April 1st, they can reopen. Here's some of the numbers there. 15% in the red tier, 25% capacity if they're in the orange tier, 35% capacity in the 67% capacity, I should say, in the yellow tier. They're limited to California, 15% capacity in the red tier, 25% capacity in the orange tier, 35% capacity in the yellow tier. They're limited to California residents only buying online tickets. And this experience also going to be very different than it was a year ago.
Yeah, absolutely. You can see slightly lower occupancy capacity limits than the ballparks. This is because we know it's a little harder to keep people in a fixed seat or a single spot throughout the entire experience, but still focused on small groups, moving through the park, having short experiences on rides, keeping almost everything outdoors. Even in the red tier, some of the indoor dining experiences are going to be closed. So really this distance between people and still focusing on outdoors and keeping your mask on. And through that, I mean, what we've seen and the science tells us is that can be done safely. So it's going to be important to keep working on those activities and making sure that, you know, certainly we're tracking disease transmission all along the way.
You know, there are folks that are watching this, though, that are going to say, look, Disney World has been open for a long time. Disney parks have been open all around the world, except for in California. The Dodgers played in the World Series in Texas. There were fans in the stands then. Thinking back, do you think maybe we waited too long on this one?
You know, I don't think so. We saw the winter surge was really, really hard on California. We saw hospitals full, and anything that might have added to that or made it a little worse, I think, cost lives. Our focus has always been on saving lives. I think that we're getting to the place where now the evidence that things can be done safer outdoors, the advent of vaccines, three high quality vaccines that are getting out into the communities, and really these downward trends in the numbers put us in a place where we can begin to do this. Of course, people will always ask the questions, could have you done this sooner? Could have you done this differently? And of course, there'll be certain things that we'll say yes to, but I'm really proud about how we've protected public health all along the way. And now we're getting to reap some of those rewards with certain things coming back that I know so many people have missed.
You know, there's some Laker fans watching this, some Warrior fans watching this right now. They want to go back inside to watch a basketball game or other indoor events. What's the timetable like for that?
Yeah, I mean, look, you can't make an announcement like today without having all of those folks, fans, operators, sports teams, live performances that happen indoors that so many people miss, not ask that question. So we're hard at work already. Over the next few weeks, we expect to be able to share that with Californians and anticipate when activities like that will come. But again, higher risk, still more concerning. There will be some delay compared to the April 1st for these outdoor activities that we talked about today.
Another big story of the week is what happened with schools. The governor at the end of the week signing a $6.6 billion plan to try to incentivize school districts to reopen. You're one of the top medical experts in the entire state. What do you say to parents? What do you say to teachers? Is it safe right now to go back into in-person school?
The overwhelming evidence shows with the protections that California not only has put in place, but insists on being in place, that we won't let schools operate without them, that schools can be operated in a fairly, very safe way. We've seen the data. We've looked around the nation. We've looked around the globe. We've looked into some of the schools in California. And with those things in mind, wearing your mask, making sure that we have physical distancing, protecting our staff, making sure that kids have a bunch of directions that they will follow, the transmission can be very, very low. And I would say not only can they open, but they should open. And that we've seen that in the evidence. And I think the governor's signing of a school support bill around getting kids back and in a safe way is appropriate. And I'm looking forward to working with educators across the state, families and students across the state to make this a reality as soon as we sort of get the chance to do so.
But you know well that there are teachers unions up and down the state that say we will not go back unless all of our teachers get their second dose of vaccine. Timetable-wise, that could be a month, month and a half out. What do you say to them?
Well, I mean, we're working to make sure that they have all of the questions they've answered about what the vaccine does and doesn't do, why there's a chance to come back to in-person education in a safe, low-risk way with the current mitigating strategies even before that second dose of the vaccine is given. And we believe we're going to make some inroads. It's not going to be perfect, but, you know, little by little, and we've seen it throughout this pandemic, the more we show that things can be done safer and lower risk, the more likely people are going to do that. And I believe that's going to also apply to schools and reopening and getting kids back to something that, frankly, not only have they missed, but they really, really need for a number of other broader health issues as well. But with the focus on teacher and staff health first and foremost.
Another big story in the news this week has to do with masks. Your recommendation, you should wear two masks, wear a surgical mask and a cloth mask over it. Meanwhile, Texas, Mississippi, other states getting rid of their mask mandates entirely. Can you understand how that's confusing to some folks when they hear both of those things at the same time? And what do you say to people who say, why can't we be more like Texas?
Well, I think California's way has been focused on saving lives and the public health mitigating factors this whole time. So as we introduce and reintroduce some of the things that we've missed, we want to make sure that the message around masking is strong. We've learned a little bit here and there over the course of the year. And we see that with some additional masking, we can really reduce transmission. So if it allows us to enjoy certain things that we've missed for a while, putting out stronger mask guidance in California is important. Our foot is not coming off the brake to go onto the gas. We're keeping on with these messages and really pushing them so we can begin to enjoy more things and not see those case rates start to drift upwards and, frankly, go out of control again.
And you would probably say as well that the health statistics in California are better than the statistics in Texas.
I mean, many are, right? Our test positivity right now versus theirs are better. And frankly, we have some of the, after this last winter surge, have seen quite a reduction in our case numbers and are working through trying to hold on to those while we get people vaccinated and get certain things that we've all missed for a while back and going in a sort of gradual and methodical way.
A final sort of big picture question. You know that there's some Californians that are frustrated by the state's response. The governor now facing a recall largely because of this. You work with him closer than just about anybody. And I'm wondering if you can take us behind the scenes for a bit and just talk to us about any perhaps misconceptions you think that are out there about him, what he's like, and what he's done on this.
Well, I mean, first and foremost, he's a leader that is going to follow the science and the evidence and work hard to make sure that we implement that in a state of 40 million people in a thoughtful way. We know that it's hard to please everyone across the state with this level of diversity, rural, urban, different stripes and colors all along the way. But I think the insistence and the stubborn persistence to keep working through it to save lives and save Californians' lives as much as possible while we pay attention to so many other factors. I mean, I think it's, his approach and leadership in that way has been in many ways an important reminder of how we're going to get through this. And I think we enter today with that in mind, as we have on almost every day of this pandemic response, and we'll keep carrying that forward.
And just lastly, I know there's been a lot of sort of tough news that you've had to deliver over the last year. It does seem like, although we got to keep wearing the masks and keep doing our part, things are significantly getting better.
I mean, they certainly are. The advent of vaccines, the improvement in our data and numbers, and just what we've learned, I think, allows us to do things differently. And yeah, it's tough news, but we knew that it was important news to share with the state. And I'm just really proud of our state overall, so many of the things we've achieved together. And it's really a testimony, not to just the leaders who've delivered the message, but all Californians who have really gotten behind this. And, it's a proud moment for all of us to keep moving towards this end. And I certainly appreciate all your viewers and all Californians' input and help to get us here.
Well, Dr. Mark Galley, thank you so much for taking out some time on a very, very busy time for you and the state leadership. And great to have you here on The Issue Is.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Our thanks to Dr. Galley. Now, to one of our most frequent guests, Congresswoman Karen Bass, back with us to talk about the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act and about that massive, nearly $2 trillion coronavirus bill. Here's Karen Bass.
Congresswoman Karen Bass is a Democrat from Los Angeles and the past chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. Congresswoman, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Let's start with the biggest issue, which is, of course, COVID. What does that relief actually mean for the average Californian watching this right now?
Well, for the average Californian making under $75,000 a year, you will be receiving a check for $1,400. For families under a certain income level, you can have a child tax credit, which is actually will be checks that will be coming to you on a monthly basis. So if you think about how at the end of the year you get a tax refund, instead of waiting till the end of the year, it will be issued out on a monthly basis in terms of checks. The unemployment insurance will be extended and the checks will increase. There'll be an increase to unemployment of $400 a week. In terms of our local communities, you know, state and local government will get additional money. Our schools that absolutely need money so that they can reopen. So this piece of legislation that I hope hits the president's desk within a week and a half, will actually be felt by everyone. And it's what we need right now. You know, billions of dollars for vaccines as well.
You know, Republicans say it's just too big. Not targeted. Some of them called it a blue state bailout for a state like California, which actually has a budget surplus right now. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, you know, there is no such thing as a blue state or a red state bailout. Every state is eligible for the money. And then, you know, I have to say that my Republican colleagues who are reluctant to invest the money that is needed desperately to keep us from falling further behind in terms of our economy had absolutely no problem before the pandemic, when the economy was in much better shape, giving away over $1 trillion in tax cuts to the wealthiest people in the country. So I don't want to hear about it. It's too much to spend. This is exactly when you need to spend money, when the average citizen needs it the most.
Are you suggesting?
So unlike the last administration, this will not be targeted to just help states run by Democrats. All 50 states will be eligible.
Are you suggesting that some Republicans may be more concerned about deficits during Democratic presidencies than during Republican presidencies?
Well, I don't want to say that. I don't want to suggest that. I want to say that clearly.
Okay.
Yes, that's the case. History says so.
Let's talk about another issue that I know is really important to you as a former healthcare worker yourself, which is vaccinations. There's been real challenges in some of our poorest, most minority communities. California making changes this week. 40% of doses are now going to go to many of those communities, including some of them that you represent yourself. Is California doing enough when it comes to getting vaccines in the arms of people that are really being hit hard by COVID-19?
Well, you know, I'm very proud of our state and our city, but I do think that more could be done. Or let me say it this way, different things need to be done. So, for example, I love the fact that 40% will be targeted to communities that need it the most. But if the only way to get it is through an online registration, you're still going to have a disproportionate impact. So we need to be far more creative in how vaccines are distributed. Let me give you an example. City Councilman Marquise Harris-Dawson goes into neighborhoods and calls people. He does phone banking, just like a political campaign, and says, in 2 days, we'll be in this park. And people come out, and they don't have any problems getting African-Americans and Latinos to sign up. If you just use an online registration, you're going to get people from affluent areas who probably have never visited some of these neighborhoods before showing up for the shots that people in the neighborhoods actually need.
We have seen evidence of that. People in Beverly Hills showing up in many of these communities. Beverly Hills with the highest vaccination rate of anywhere. So let's talk also about another big issue this week, which was the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act. It passed this week in the House. This is something you are directly responsible for. Bottom line, what is the most important change in this bill?
Well, I think one of the things that has frustrated people for years is that we keep seeing the same thing over and over again. People being killed, unarmed, you know, at the hands of the police. And until police are held accountable, so there's two provisions of the bill, qualified immunity that allows for officers and departments to be sued, and then lowering the standard from which you can prosecute an officer from willful to reckless. So willful means you have to prove that the officer intended to put his knee on George Floyd's neck and kill him, versus what he did was completely reckless, and he should have known that it would result in death. That's one of the reasons why you never see officers being charged, just like the case in Rochester, New York, where the officers put the spit hood over the man's head, and then he died later on. They got off, no charges. And right now, of course, you know, the trial is getting ready to be underway for the officer that killed George Floyd. We have to be able to hold officers accountable.
What do you expect from that trial next week, the Derek Chauvin trial?
I mean, I, you know, yesterday was the 30th anniversary of the Rodney King beating, and the whole world saw Rodney King be beat almost within an inch of his life. And we were so sure there was going to be a conviction. How could there possibly not be a conviction when we all witnessed the execution of George Floyd over 8.5 minutes? So that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping for a conviction. I'm hoping for the maximum amount of charges, because what happened that day impacted the United States all around the world. Everybody saw that around the world.
So let's talk for a moment more about your legislation, though. It passed the House. Now it heads to the Senate. Last year, when Republicans were in control of the Senate, it didn't really go anywhere. Now you've got a Democratic majority Senate, but just barely. What's the status of negotiations right now, and what is that bill potentially going to look like? What kind of changes could we see?
Well, I think, you know, the most controversial aspects of the bill are the two that I mentioned, qualified immunity and Section 242, which lowers the standard of prosecution. We will begin meeting in a bipartisan way on Monday evening. And so what I imagine will happen will be members of the House, both Democrats and Republicans, will go through it with a fine-tooth comb, and hopefully we'll be able to reach some areas of compromise. Our negotiating partners in the Senate is Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina and Senator Cory Booker from New Jersey. And so there is a tremendous amount of goodwill on both sides. And I believe that we're going to be successful. I do.
Let's talk for a moment about Rodney King. 30 years ago this week, Rodney King was beaten in the streets of Southern California. It was a seminal event. You wrote about it in the USA Today this week, talking about how at the time you actually felt hope because you thought people would actually see what you had seen yourself for such a long time. Where do you think we're at 30 years later? Have we moved forward?
Oh, yes. I think that we have moved forward in a variety of different ways, but obviously it hasn't been enough because people still keep dying. And it's not just death. I mean, fortunately, Rodney King didn't die at that moment. But, you know, it's the brutality that continues. And it's very hard, I think, until the advent of cell phone cameras that documented it over and over and over again, Black people were never believed. And you know, and another interesting topic is the insurrection that happened here on January 6th, where now we have acknowledged that there are examples of white supremacist individuals or organizations in law enforcement as well as in the military. And that is also something that Black communities have been pleading for the general public to believe was the case. And so with all of this out in the open now, maybe we can actually bring about change. But it's very hard to bring about change if you won't even acknowledge that the problem exists. And what happened with Rodney King was it was the first time that the general public saw what we knew was happening in Black communities all the time.
Well, and let's talk for a moment about January 6th, because this week you actually had to shut down the House of Representatives because of fears of another attack from QAnon conspiracists. As somebody who's there, what is it like to be in the Capitol right now? And is this sort of Fort Washington, D.C. going to be the new normal in the People's House?
Well, I most certainly hope it is not going to be the new normal, but I do believe that the troops will be here for another couple of months. And, you know, I mean, literally, I walk down the halls and there are soldiers walking all with rifles. And, you know, being a member of Congress and traveling internationally, you know, I do work a lot with the military, but it does feel like you're on a military installation. It's even difficult to come to the Capitol because the entire area is fenced off. And I will tell you that you can't get a sense of it by looking at the pictures. You have to experience this because it's not just the Capitol that's fenced off. It's the entire area.
Yeah, and we were there for the inauguration, and it was absolutely surreal. Feel like you're in a different country, and it's so sad to see that. Hopefully that changes. All right, let's end on something fun, because you know we like to have fun on this show, Congresswoman. So let's play Personal Issues. This is the game where we put 30 seconds up on the clock. And since we got a lot of good news when it comes to COVID, it seems like we're starting to come out of our quarantine slowly, correctly, yes, with masks and everything, but the world seems to be going in the right direction. I want to ask some questions about your COVID experience, although I know you've been working the entire time, but some questions about what maybe you've learned during COVID. So here we go. Ready? 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. Favorite show that you've binge watched during COVID?
Oh, gosh, there's so many of them. Lupin is the latest one. Lupin.
Okay.
On Netflix.
Favorite book you've read?
A book about Africa and the United Nations, actually. A history of the United Nations.
Sounds like a light read. Favorite meal to cook?
Blackened salmon and spinach.
Oh, very fun. And last question, big picture, what is your sort of big takeaway as we come out of this incredible, unforgettable, sad year, and where we go from here?
Well, I think our lives are going to be changed forever. I mean, I think work is going to be different. I think, you know, Zooming is something that has become what we do now. And I think that when life gets back to normal, and I can't wait to go to restaurants, that's probably the thing I miss the most, restaurants and movie theaters. But I think that we're going to be doing things different. I think school is going to be different. And there's parts of this that I think have been good, and I intend to keep in my life. That's major social activities, but sometimes doing events and meetings on Zoom and not always having to be in the same physical space.
Yes, there is some value in that, but I do look forward to the day, hopefully, where we can be in the same physical space and we can have you back here on the set. Congresswoman Karen Bass, always a pleasure. Thanks for sharing your views.
Thanks for having me on.
Our thanks to Congresswoman Bass and to Dr. Galley. Our thanks to you for listening. We'll see you next week. We're expected to be joined by the Micellus brothers, the guys behind the Midas Touch. They're a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to that conversation. In the meantime, I hope you'll connect with me in social media at Alex Michelson. That's Alex with an E. And also review us in iTunes and everywhere else where you listen to podcasts. We appreciate that and letting other people know about us. Thanks for listening to The Issue Is.